Blog Talk Radio.
My calculations are correct. When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious sh-
What's up, everybody? Happy Sunday evening. Welcome to Punch Drunk Critics Live. We've got a big show for you today, as we have brought to you every single week for the last, well, shit, feels like 4 or 5 months now. We've been bringing the thunder, as it were, Travis.
No,
bringing
it's been
the heat.
It's been a crazy few weeks. We've had a lot of interviews, a lot of great reviews. It's just been a lot of fun these last few weeks. I hope we can keep it up.
Oh, we will. We do. We bring the thunder. I'm gonna keep using bring the thunder if that's all right.
Yeah,
it just feels right. But today's show we have. Speaking of the thunder, we have one of the most thunderous voices in the film community of the last probably I'd say 25. How long has it been since like 1988?
Yeah, he's been around for almost 30 years now. Spike Lee's been around, and doing his, he has a really unique voice. You know,
yeah.
He's one of those guys that really focused on community and really a lot of issues in minority communities and things like that. Spike Lee has been a powerful voice in this industry for a long time. One of the standard bearers, the flag bearers of the independent movie movement over the
right.
last 30 years. I mean, it's him and Kevin Smith, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just really blew that whole genre up. And fortunately, I had a chance to talk to him a few days ago. So,
yeah, this is a guy that I mean, he stirs up so much controversy, but in such a good way. I mean, even if you don't agree with everything the man says, even if you don't agree with everything he puts out there, even if you don't like his movies, whatever, you got his balls
right.
basically to put out. You know, like he's not putting out anything that's wrong or anything like that. But he's putting out stuff a lot of other people wouldn't put out just because there was a good chance that if his shit wasn't good, he'd been successful. But he took that shot in the dark, making the movies that he was making, weren't talking about the communities he was talking about, and really put it out there, and it paid off for him. And you can really tell that in the talk that you had with him. You know, the guy still has like a kind of defiant tone to him. He still wants to do what he wants to do. You know what I mean? And you kind of
have
to respect that.
Absolutely. You definitely have to respect it. And yeah, he is sort of a controversial figure. And one of the interesting things about that day, and I'll just talk about that day a little bit without going right into the interview. It was interesting because before our thing started, there were a lot of people talking to Spike Lee before. And, I was just kind of listening to what they were talking about. And there were a lot of people who I could tell were just there hoping for the controversial comment. You know, they were just there to try to get him to say something that they could plaster on the paper or plaster on their site, you know, or... you know, splash it on Twitter or something like that. I thought that was really disgusting, but because they weren't there to talk about Red Hook Summer, which is what, you know, I was there to talk about, what most people were.
Travis, you there? Oh, it's going to be one of those shows, folks, because right now I have no studio, and it looks like Travis dropped off, so hopefully he comes back. But yeah, what Travis was saying, as you see, you know, we obviously have to cut a lot of these interviews. To avoid for space and time, and honestly, folks, you don't want to hear the stuff in between when people are asking questions and stuff's going back and forth. A lot of times, it's just jumbled mess. But there were quite a few people that really didn't have any interest in the movie, and you kind of got a sense of that from Spike later on in the interview. But
mm-hmm.
you know, there were quite a few people, like, you know, he's doing a documentary about the 25th anniversary of the Bad album, and
right.
what's the first thing they ask? Not about Michael Jackson's talent or his music. Oh, what was it like with that family? What was the drama like in that family?
Right. No, exactly.
You could almost hear him getting kind of annoyed at it. He actually said at one point in the interview, I don't know if it made it onto the air bits we'll play, but he actually said at one point, well, can we talk about Red Hook Summer? I can talk
yeah.
about that. You know?
Yes. No, it's true. And I've listened to a lot of interviews with him over the last few days just to kind of get a sense of how everything went on the tour for him. And you know, and that's been a lot of what it's been, is a lot of people talking about other things. Spike Lee likes to keep his focus.
Yeah.
You know, there's at one point the conversation, you know, it kind of, Chuck Smite tries to veer it into Old Boy territory. And it's like, you know, Spike Lee's not having it. You know what I mean? He wants to talk about Red Hood Summer. He wants to talk about the projects, you know, that he can talk about. You know, and so I get that. I get the irritation and the frustration he had. You know, trying to keep a tight focus, because a movie like Old Boy doesn't need to be promoted. Okay,
right.
that movie's going to be what it's going
to
be.
Not
but,
to mention that the girl that asked the question, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I can't forget about this. The girl that asked the question is obviously has no interest in the movie at all, because she asked, well, it was really popular in Japan, right after Spike Lee the famous Korean movie, you know?
Oh, no. Well, the interesting thing about that is the one who asked that question is somebody that we both know.
Sorry.
So,
sorry.
No, it's fine, and it's not somebody I have a particular amount of respect for, so I didn't really care. But but it just made me laugh, and our good friend Tim Gordon was there with us, so he was just like, whatever. Whatever. But yeah. So it was an interesting day. It was an interesting conversation with Spike. And Red Hook Summer, it's an interesting movie. I'll just say that. It's an interesting movie.
Is that our entire review for it?
No, I didn't know if you were ready to jump into the interview for it.
Yeah, let's jump into it so we can. I'm sure everybody wants to hear what Spike Lee had to say. So let's talk a little bit about the movie. Or do you want to run the interview first, then we'll talk about the movie?
No, let's talk about the movie first. Red Hook Summer. Red Hook Summer is it's a lot of people really considered it to be sort of a follow up to Do the Right Thing, and Spike Lee had a lot to do with why people felt that way. We first heard about the movie about a year ago, and the initial images were, you know, Spike Lee, you know, and all that stuff. And he revealed that the Mookie character from Do the Right Thing would be coming back for it. So, obviously, people think, oh.
And Travis is going to be happy after that one, because he has dropped off again. We are obviously working on some technical issues here. One of these days, folks, we will get into an actual studio with actual hardwired connections to our airwaves here. Right now, we have to do it a slightly different way. So we'll give Travis a minute to get back on the air, and I'll just tell you that Red Hook Summer is about Flick Royale, a young boy from middle-class Atlanta. He's spending the summer with his grandfather, Bishop Enoch Rouse, in the Red Hook Projects in Brooklyn.
Everybody's going to be one of those days.
Yeah, I already put it out there for you. I was just telling everybody that it's about Flick Royale and how he goes to spend the summer with his grandfather, Bishop Enoch Rouse, in the
right.
Red Hook Projects in Brooklyn.
Right. So Flick is more than just your average Atlanta boy. He's an atheist. He's a vegan. He just totally does not fit with the lifestyle of his grandfather, Enoch, and really doesn't fit into Red Hook at all. He's like, he's just a fish out of water. But basically, the film is sort of like this kind of a tug of war between Enoch and Flick, as Enoch tries to, you know, introduce the boy to God, to Jesus, so to speak. Along the way, Flick kind of runs afoul of a lot of characters in the town, including this thug named Box, played by Nate Parker, who's a great actor. And you know, the movie has a lot of Spike Lee's signature touches, sort of vintage, sun-kissed style. The movie looks great, you know. And of course, there's Bruce Hornsby's kind of a interesting soundtrack, to say the least. Did you have a chance to see the film?
Yeah, I saw it.
Okay. But that's basically the plot of it. Flick becomes friends with this girl named Chaz Morningstar, a girl his age. Sort of, they have this weird sort of flirty relationship. And you know, a lot of the movie is Bishop Enoch and his sermons. And you get a lot of long conversations about a lot of things. Gentrification, the influence of technology, and just the sort of overall direction of African-American youths in today's day and age. You get a lot of lengthy conversations like that. And to me, a lot of those conversations don't really go anywhere. And to me, almost nothing in this movie really goes anywhere. But you know, I have a lot of issues with this movie, so I'll let you say what you had to say about it first, and then I'll jump in.
Okay. Well, if anybody's seen the posters for the movie, this is what I always dug about Spike Lee's shooting style, is that the best thing I can compare it to, and it's not a good comparison at all because it's nowhere near this extreme, but like the Punisher Warzone color scheme, like there's always like a vibrancy, like it's almost like a sullen vibrancy to the colors he uses. It seems to be only the Brooklyn Chronicle movies that he does it for.
Right,
but
this is the sixth one of those.
Right, and I mean, you wouldn't see it in Inside Man. You wouldn't see this color palette, but you know, in these movies, you always seem to get like colors that are just a little bit off of otherworldly. You know what I mean? And it makes the movie very visually appealing. But story wise, me and Spike have never really vibed. I think he just has too much to say for me to follow. When I sit down and watch movies, this movie it really was kind of appropriate. Because it seemed like a lot of the sermons, as Travis was telling you, a lot of the movies told through the sermons of Bishop Enoch, and it really just seems like the way a lot of people take church that go on a weekly level, and that's if you go every week and you hear that sermon and you hear the lesson, and you don't think about it much after that day, it seems like you're just getting a bunch of random thoughts that never come to fruition. That's kind of what this movie was like for me. It was just over and over again with big ideas, not bad ideas, good ideas actually. You know, stuff that you'd almost want to see fleshed out into a more a longer story arc than each one of these little stories gets. But you don't get that. Yeah, I mean, you just get the idea and then it bounces off. So ironically enough, it does make the movie very much like most people's weekly church experience. So I don't know if that was meant to happen or if that was just a side effect of having too much to say in one place. But all in all, I think you know, for completionists, you're going to want to see Red Hood Summer just to finish out the Brooklyn Chronicles. Although I shouldn't say finish out, because as you'll hear from Spike a little bit here, that he does still have a couple more stories in him. But I don't think if you haven't been introduced and hooked on the, no pun intended, on the stories he's told about the Brooklyn area, then I don't think this is going to be the good one for you to start off with. It's not going to get you really wanting to hear the rest of the stories based off this one movie, because it's just a lot of disjointed, large breadth ideas that don't get fleshed out anywhere. And that's pretty much all I had about it. So I'm just going to stall for time now until Travis gets back on the air. He's dropped again. But I'm sure he'll be back in just a couple minutes. The acting I thought was great. I mean, the acting is not really something I ever really worry about with Spike Lee movies. He seems to have a real talent for getting good actors to play his major roles. Now, you'll notice in a lot of his movies, the side roles are a little bit more hokey sometimes, I guess you'd say, or the acting's not really as on point as the rest of the roles. But he has a real talent for finding good, solid actors to play his main characters in these movies. So even the young buck, and I really think that he did a great job, and it's easy to follow. I'm trying to see where Travis is at here as I buy for time. But I think Spike Lee seems a little bit uneasy back in this area of telling stories. Maybe that's why all these big ideas he has, all these sermons that are told, aren't followed through to fruition, because I think he's fallen out of telling this kind of story, telling this kind of a real feel story, because he's moved a lot into, and I think more than we realize, he's moved a lot into more major films as of late. I mean, I'm just looking at the director filmography right now. I mean, even stuff like Miracle at St. Anna, which was, you know, kind of into his wheelhouse of his usual storytells, was still a bigger budget action piece. It wasn't a story on a lower level like that. Like She Hate Me was a sequel. Man, He Got Game might have been the last one in 1998, unless I'm missing something here. Was the last time he really got to that smaller level. So, I did think the movie was good, but I don't think it's a good first movie for you to get introduced to the Brooklyn Chronicles. I really don't think it's his best work. I don't think he followed through on a lot of stuff that he could have followed through on. Travis, I was just telling everybody during my review that it was kind of I lost Travis again. But he was back for a second. He was just stopping in to say what's up, see how we were doing, see how long I could vibe for time here. But
you know, Spike Lee is somebody that no matter where you drop him, he seems to do well. You know, in the smaller indie, like Kevin Smith, for instance, the one we were comparing him to earlier, Kevin Smith never really got out of his wheelhouse. The Clerks, Small Rats, Chasing Amy, you know, smaller story-driven movies. Whenever he tried to do something else, I'm not going to say he failed miserably, but he pretty much failed miserably. A Cop Out was his one jump out to something that he didn't write himself, and he was trying to direct action scenes, things he's not comfortable doing. It just wasn't good at all. Whereas Spike Lee really is the more successful of the two if you look at the whole story. I'm looking at his filmography now, and I forget sometimes how much he's actually done.
Wrong about everything.
I'm pretty sure I am.
I have no idea. I'm sorry, folks. I had to totally reboot everything, and hopefully that will fix matters for me. Yeah.
Well,
I'm not sure where you're at.
I just started talking about how Spike Lee was the more successful of the two independent film movement leaders with Kevin Smith and the other. Yeah, but
prolific, I guess, in a way. I mean, Kevin Smith, I'm thinking about the movies that have their signature styles to them, like Kevin Smith Jersey movies.
Right.
Or
what I'm saying is outside of their wheelhouse, who's had the most success, and I think that's hands down Spike Lee, because Cop Out. We barely got a Kevin Smith, but I mean, I guess the moral of my review story here was that I thought it was very ironic that that this movie, where it failed, was kind of like, I don't know if it was on purpose. It could have been on purpose for Spike Lee, is that the movie felt like a bunch of, I was glad you compared it to sermons, because it felt like a bunch of sermons that the person that goes to church every week and doesn't ever think about it afterwards, how they would see it, because you just get these big ideas every Sunday, and if you don't think about it afterwards, then it's just, that's all it is. And that's kind of how the movie felt.
To me, it's a movie that's both preachy and insubstantial, which is very hard to do. And somehow he manages to do that with this movie, which is really disturbing to me. This movie has a lot of issues that I think are very amateurish issues. One, the editing is not all that great. Two, Spike Lee casts a bunch of unknowns. Now, there's only two people there who have really serious experience as an actor, and it's Clark Peters, who plays Bishop Enoch Rouse. And I think he gives an Oscar-worthy performance. I think he's amazing, the power and the presence he has in the film, especially when he's up there on the pulpit. I think he's great. And Nate Parker, who's also very good as Box. But the main character is Flick Royal, and he's played by Jules Brown, and he is not a good actor. And for a movie that is essentially a coming-of-age story, it does not help to have an actor who can't carry any dramatic weight whatsoever. He's pretty much emotionless the whole time. So that's an issue. The girl that he falls for, the character is Chaz Morningstar. I forget the girl's name. He plays her. She is so bad, it's a distraction. I could not listen to her talk. She is just so terrible in this movie that it's not even funny. Those things are big issues for me. I mean, this movie would have been at least 50% better if he had bothered to cast better actors in it, but he doesn't. Now, the other thing that, for me, that really got me with this movie, like I said, a lot of people compare it to Do the Right Thing, and that's fair, but I think it's more along the lines of Crooklyn than anything else. Crooklyn had that sort of exploratory slice-of-life type narrative where there's no true conflict. There's no true narrative going on here. It's just a lot of, you know, it's just kind of, this is what's going on today, and it's one of those movies where not a whole heck of a whole lot happens. Mm-hmm. And that worked for Crooklyn. It doesn't really work here, and the movie just sort of comes off as aimless. And like I said earlier, it comes off as very preachy, because it seems like the only thing that's connecting a lot of these scenes together are really long, dry conversations. So that's a problem. The movie only really starts to get good to me at the end, when there's this huge turn, this huge twist at the end, near the end of the movie, that I don't think anybody really sees coming. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that's the movie that Spike Lee really wants to tell, because that was the one that's when the movie really picked up for me. And a lot of it has to do with Clark Peters, with the way his character has to shift at that point. I think the way he pulls it off is absolutely amazing. I was more interested in the movie from that point on, and it's just unfortunate that was like the last 15 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, you kind of get a little sense that is the story you want to tell in the when we play the interview here later. He kind of drops little pseudo hints throughout that's the part that was important to him, really.
Right. It's something he's never done before. I mean, we've seen this stuff. The rest of this stuff we've seen before. And in the first 15 minutes of the movie, I had turned to our friend Tim Gordon, and I was like, has Brooklyn changed in the last 20 years at all? Because it doesn't look like because it was the exact same characters, the exact same, stereotypes. Oh, there's the thug. Oh, there's the, there's the overly religious lady on the corner. And it's just nothing seemed to change. There's the hoochie mama. And it's like, okay, this stuff doesn't. This feels like there's been no progress in Brooklyn over the last 25 years. And to me, I know that's not true. So I know that that's just Spike Lee, and he's kind of outdated.
He's still talking about the Brooklyn he knew. I mean, let's be honest. My man's not living in Brooklyn anymore in the projects or anything, regardless of what he wants to tell you. So that's, excuse me, that's the last Brooklyn that he knew intimately.
Right. I totally agree. So, I mean, those are my big issues with the movie. I don't feel like he ever gets to anything that matters. I know he tries to. He touches on a number of subjects in this movie, but I don't feel like he deals with them in any way that makes them important to the movie. And as much as I welcome the conversations he wants to have, you got to make them fit into the story as well, and I don't think he ever does that. So, for me, this is like his worst movie in a very... very long time. I had a conversation with some people a few days before who had seen it before me, and they were like, Spike Lee needs to stop writing, period, after this movie. And I was like, I don't believe that. I don't think one bad movie makes you need to stop writing.
Right. Maybe you need to refocus.
I didn't feel that way after this, but I do feel like Spike Lee needs to evolve. And I think he's a perfectly fine director for hire when it comes to Inside Man and some other stuff. But when it comes to going back to his roots, I think he needs to evolve a little bit. I think he needs to change some things. So, for me, this was a 2 out of 5. Not my favorite movie by Spike Lee at all. And really, part of a really tough week of movies for me, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm on that tough week train with you. But yeah, this one gets a 2.5 out of 5 for me. There just wasn't enough follow through on a lot of the stuff that was there. And like I said before, to grab another movie from your original universe that made you famous, I guess you'd say, like the Brooklyn Chronicles is how you first. So I'll keep saying that. To bring that back after a long absence, you really need to bring something that can substitute as the entrance to this universe for people that are uninitiated. And I really don't think it does. I think anybody that watches this movie without seeing anything else that Spike Lee's done, I'm not saying he needs to know the characters or anything like that, but just not seeing anything else Spike Lee's done, I think this is going to make them wonder why Spike Lee is famous in the first place. That being said, I didn't think it was horrible.
It looks like a college movie to me. It does not. There are just so many things technically that are wrong with it. Now, of course, he does get a couple of his tried and true tricks in there. We get the dolly shot, which is always awesome. Get that at the end, like I said, we get a lot of the jumping around the city to kind of accentuate a point, which I think is always cool. But other than that, no, this movie has tons of issues.
But I didn't realize that Clark Peters, I guess it was his hair, it was Lester from The Wire. That's
right.
Kind of awesome.
Yeah.
I guess it gets another... There's
another Wire cameo at the end of the movie, which I just thought was stupid. And I'm a big fan of Isaiah Whitlock, if you know who he is and you know the character I'm talking about. He shows up in the movie, and he's not playing the same guy, but he does his signature catchphrase. And it's like, all right, Spike, yeah, I get it. You're pandering to the audience right now. All right, that's fine. It just felt totally out of place. That's all. It just felt out of place.
Yeah, he's done a lot of movies with Spike Lee though. As far as I guess 25th Hour is the first I can think of off the top of my head. But
yeah.
So
yeah. For those who like Tracy Camilla Johns and She's Gotta Have It, you get to see her character and how she is now, 20 years later. She's Gotta Have It was of course Spike Lee's first, arguably his most important film, and the main character from that movie actually shows up in Red Hook Summer, and she's a lot different than she was back then. So if you're interested in that, it might be worth seeing it for that reason alone. But it's only for like 2 minutes, folks. So
yeah, But yeah, so I mean, all in all, I think it's going to be on the beholder to decide whether you're going to see this one or not. But let's go to the interview. Did you get all the questions I sent over?
Yes, I got them.
Okay, cool. Hopefully there wasn't anything else in there that I missed. But,
No. I think you got everything that was important. I hope it turned out okay. But yeah. So yeah, the interview basically started off with asking Spike Lee about the mother in the film and why she wanted to bring Flick up from Atlanta to Red Hook. Oh, wait a minute. Where is that on here?
It's at the bottom. Spike 1, I'll get it.
There it is. I got it.
For 15 years, he's been trying, the Bishop Enoch has been trying to have a reconciliation with his daughter. For 13 years, he's been trying to see his grandson. Most recently, her husband died in Afghanistan. He's in the age where he's starting to act up. So she broke down over all those years and said, you know, her son needs to see her grandma. They're family. I mean, that comes out family. People have to make decisions. If you have someone in your family to kill somebody, are you going to make a decision, I'm never going to go visit them again?
No, but if I had it,
But that's you.
Yeah,
But let me finish, though.
Okay.
But that's you. This happens all the time in movies. Well, I wouldn't do it. Well, I wouldn't do that. But that's not you. I hear black men all the time. If that nigga ever put a hand on me, being husband or wife, I'm leaving. How many women do you know today that are still with their husbands or boyfriends getting slapped upside the head? Now, that does, you maybe leave, but you're not every single African-American woman today. You're not every single African-American woman that's a single mom trying to raise a boy today. That's how I'd answer that question.
I don't know if you could hear me chuckling in the background during his answer, but I was definitely enjoying it because Spike was rowdy that day. That's what I'm going to say. He was in a mood to argue, and that was just to clarify, that was a silly question that was asked. And I'll be the first to admit it wasn't my question. I'll also tell you that wasn't my question. That was a silly question that someone asked them, because if they had watched the first 5 minutes of the movie, they would have known the answer. But Spike was not happy with that question.
I love that he has no problem calling people out. Like, you know, a lot of times, talent or directors, actors, when you talk to them, they want to be on their best behavior for you, believe it or not, which is kind of
right.
Off-putting sometimes. But, you know, because obviously you're going to be writing about them. They don't want you to write that they're a douche. But
right.
he has no problem being real. And as much as I wanted to hate it when I first started listening to this, I at the end I was just like, man, I really like that this guy is who he is, regardless.
Right. Exactly. He took really a kind of a secretive approach to this movie. He made it totally in secret. It was practically done before anybody even knew what was going on. So I kind of wanted to know why he took that approach this time.
Because people didn't need to know. When I was ready to tell them, they would find out. And also, why go see a movie if you know everything about it before the movie even came out? What's the surprise? That's why it's a lot. You go to a movie theater, you see a trailer. Sometimes you don't have to see the movie. You know what's happening? They put the best stuff in the trailer anyway. You're like, oh, I know that movie. I know what that's about. Why go?
Was there ever any thoughts maybe doing a more true sequel, or was this always?
No, there's never ever a thought. There was a misunderstanding. People thought automatically. It was a sequel because Mookie's in it. That's all they knew.
You could have a scene with Mookie. That was a movie, right?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of stuff. Not a lot of. There was a lot of stuff that Flick was shooting. We cut out because Orange got the point that he's making a documentary about Red Hook, so we have to show everything that he's shooting.
Yeah. I had to squeeze in a handful of questions right there in that one.
So you gotta do it, man.
I know. Like I said, it was, I don't know if I told you about it, but there was like 30 people in that room all trying to get questions in, so I took my shot when I could. All right. But I love his answer there, by the way, too. And I actually appreciate the fact that he didn't tell us everything about the movie right away. And it is funny the way, and I did it too. I covered the movie on our site. I covered it as basically being a Do the Right Thing sequel for a long time until I kind of realized it wasn't anymore. So, I mean, he's right. And people just sort of jumped to conclusions about it based off one single ingredient, which was Mookie. When the fact is, characters from all his movies repopulate all his other movies. Like, he brings back characters all the time. So
yeah.
It's kind of silly to just make that assumption, and I made that assumption, so, you know.
I'm going to play the game one more time, just because I think this is something that needs to be told. As many times, I mean, obviously you and I make a living off of covering news that comes out, but so we kind of need it, but at the same time, everybody that bitches about movies being spoiled and all this, you're the same ones that are sitting there looking for these tidbits when they come out and reading these spoilers every day, and it's gotten so bad that it almost sounds arrogant of Spike to say what he says, but it's damn true, because it's his
right.
It's his creation. And just listen to the beginning of this again for why it was kept so quiet.
Because people didn't need to know. When I was ready to tell them, they would find out.
I mean, that's what I was talking about at the beginning, where like, he's going to say what he wants to say. That's like the most awesome soundbite that I've heard in an interview in a long time.
It's great. We should actually cut that part out and just make it a soundbite, because I think it's kind of funny.
Yeah, we might.
I think it's kind of funny.
Because people didn't need to know. When I was ready to tell them, they would find out.
Exactly. That's all we need right there. Just cut that out.
Yeah, that's perfect.
all right. Obviously, Spike Lee really likes to use the summertime in a lot of his movies. And if you watch Red Hook Summer, you'll see everybody's – it's like the hottest day of the summer, as usual. It seems like in movies, not just Spike Lee movies, but in a lot of movies, the summer and the heat plays a factor. It makes people open up. So we wanted to ask him about why he always chooses the summertime.
Hot times.
Yeah, things jump off in the summertime, especially in New York. You got all those people living on top of each other. There's a study that after a certain rate in New York City, I mean, everything, crime goes up. I mean, everything just goes bananas.
The riot weather.
Not just riot, just two people, husband and wife, siblings. It's just certain temperature, people lose it.
I love that answer too. Here's where we get people trying to get him to say something controversial. Spike Lee was asked about his opinion on the Obama administration. He was very vocal and very much a supporter last time around, very visible. He hasn't been quite as visible this time, and part of it could have been that he's been busy, but maybe there's some other reasons.
That's not my opinion. That was that character's opinion. There are black people who feel that way, especially if you live in Red Hood Projects.
So,
things ain't changed Red Hood Projects.
So then how are you going about the campaign and the project right now?
It's going to be close. I'm going to support him. I am supporting him. And we'll
okay. Are you doing any documentary work on the campaign?
No.
I know it's not great for air to leave that last part on there, but I was like, I can't cut that. That's too good.
Yeah, but no, it was great. That was great. Themes of religion and faith and spirituality are very much a part of Red Hook Summer. So we wanted to ask him about his thoughts on the impact of the church on the African-American community.
This is this specific church. This church struggling Red Hook. Little piece of heaven, Baptist Church of Red Hook, and the good Bishop Enoch Rouse is trying to rally his flock, his congregation, in this cruel and harsh world. He's finally getting a chance to meet his grandson. They never set eyes on each other before, and he's desperately trying to get him to accept God, to find Jesus in his life.
All right. We also wanted to know how it feels for Spike to have etched his name in the upper echelon of indie filmmakers. I mean, the guy is basically a legend at this point, whether he makes another movie again or not.
I'm not curtailing just the black history. I've really been too busy to think about the body work. We're continuing to build upon it. You know, we're not messing around. I'm here. If you don't know this, Red Hook Summit was self-financed. It's being self-distributed. I'm out here trying to get the word out. Also just finished another film, Bad 25, which is about the making of Michael Jackson's Bad album. So August 31st will be the 25th anniversary of Bad. As you all you know, Bad was a follow-up to Thriller, the greatest selling album of all time. I just finished directing Mike Tyson on Broadway in a play called, a one-man show called Mike Tyson, Undisputed Truth. Mike was great. His first time on Broadway, my first time directing on Broadway. In October, I began to shoot my new film, Old Boy, a remake of the Korean classic film, so starring Josh Brolin. So we're about to work, and then in the spring, I go back to teaching at NYU. So, you know, working, you know, don't really, it's not about, for me, look in the past and I did this and that and that and this and that and this. We're just moving forward, looking forward to continue to grow and build the body of work.
I didn't mean to cut you off there. What were you going to say?
Oh, no, it's okay. That's what I was going to say, because we're talking about him being an iconic filmmaker.
Right.
I almost take issue with him being always labeled indie, because, I mean, I suppose that is where he made his mark, but
mm-hmm.
if you think about filmmakers the last 25 years, Steven Spielberg, George Lucas, I think Spike Lee's name at least is brought up in defining the last 25, 30 years of movies, more so even than a Kevin Smith or anybody else like that, like, you know, a lower level, like Michael Bay would be even before him. You know, I think he's one of those names that really defines the last 30 years. Whether you like his movies or not, that's the impact he's had.
Well, yeah, it's more than just the indie filmmaker thing. He also really put black filmmaking on the map.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there have been others, of course, who kind of laid the groundwork for him, but it really took off with him in the late 80s and early 90s. And he made black films that were you know, relatable to everybody, you know, because, you know, when it boils down to it, you know, a lot of these movies they all have universal themes to them, and he brought that to everybody, like a movie like Crooklyn, which debuts in the top five, you know, or Do the Right Thing, which is one of the greatest movies ever made, that, you know, regardless of whether it's, you know, geared towards minorities or not, it's just a great film overall. Spike Lee really has done that throughout his career. It's been lately that he's been kind of struggling doing sort of indie filmmaker thing.
I think he's
found more success, you know, in the mainstream. But I like the fact that it hasn't really changed him, though. Like, he's still making the movies he wants to make, like making those two documentaries about New Orleans or making a movie like Bad 25 or making the Kobe Bryant documentary that he did or whatever it was or whatever, and all that stuff that he's been doing. He makes the movies he likes, and I think that he'll do a movie like Old Boy or Inside Man so he can keep making those movies, and I like that part of him.
No, that, I mean, that's probably the most respectable thing about the man is that, and there's a lot to respect about him, but the fact that he can go out and do these things and not become, you know, a studio drone that comes out and says the politically correct thing. And does, I mean, and like he mentioned in that last clip, you know, this movie was self-financed and self-distributed. You will not find that basically anywhere else. You know, you'll have filmmakers bitch about the studios messing with their stuff. And this is one of the things I hate about Kevin Smith, actually, as a matter of fact, is he always bitches about not being able to make the movie he wants to make. And, oh, well, the studios have so much money. And like, motherfucker, you have so much money. Use someone else to make the movie you want to make. You can do it. And Spike Lee knows it does that. Now, I think, you know, his fan base is a bit more dedicated than Kevin Smith's, where maybe it's not such a risk for him to put money into because he knows at least recoup it maybe. But still, he doesn't know that. And when it's your money, that's a risk that a lot of people wouldn't take. And he still does it.
Right. I think there's the difference between him and Spike Lee, between Kevin Smith and Spike Lee, is Kevin Smith hasn't had that one movie that I think people are going to put in the annals of filmmaking history.
Yeah.
I mean, and there are a lot of movies that you like and I like and a lot of people who are his fans love. Like, I'll put Clerks up against anything. I love it. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? I can watch it anytime. I can watch it over and over again. I'll put Chasing Amy in that same category. I can watch these movies over and over again. But do they have that sort of, this movie is a unquestioned classic. Do they have that kind of feel to them? Or do they have that kind of acclaim? I don't think so.
No.
So
I mean, I don't think Smith's movies will leave the mark 20 years from now that even the best of right. Kevin Smith movies, because I mean they're targeting a different area of filmmaking, and that's Kevin Smith's making dick and fart jokes and Spike Lee's talking about stuff that matters. And at the end of the day, you know, that makes the world of difference. I hate to say it, but it does.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Do the Right Thing, you look at Malcolm X, you look at movies like that. I mean, these movies are going to be, people are going to be talking about these movies 100 years from now.
Yeah.
I don't know if people will be talking about Mallrats 100 years from now, or that's not fair to compare it to Mallrats, because totally different things. But
well, I mean,
I don't know if people will be talking about Clerks 100 years from now. As much as I love it, and you know, a lot of people love it, I don't know if people will be. I just don't think it has that same level of impact. So, you know.
Well, even the guts it takes to make the movies. I mean, I'm not trying to come off like the biggest Spike Lee fanboy in the world here,
right.
But I mean, I think there's a level of respect that you have to give, because like Kevin Smith, yeah, there's a risk in putting some of the dirty jokes that he puts in his movies. But at the end of the day, people are just going to think you're a pervert. They're not going to stop watching your stuff. But Spike Lee brings out a movie like Malcolm X, you know, a mainstream. I mean, everybody knows who Malcolm X is, but to actually see, you know, as a white man in America, watching the first half of that movie, I felt uncomfortable. But I felt bad. You know, I'm sitting there watching. I'm like, I don't even know if I want to watch this, because it's putting things out there that I didn't know about. I don't want to know about. And then, but I still watch the whole movie because it's good. And the simple fact is, he puts something out there like that to a mainstream audience that could have taken his name. Because whether it's true or not, that could still turn off a lot of people from wanting to watch your stuff. But he didn't have a problem with doing that. He's going to tell the truth regardless. And I just respect the guts in his filmmaking more than the guts in talking about lesbians in 1993 or something like that.
He's on record as saying that he doesn't think Malcolm X is a movie that could get made today. And I kind of agree with him. I think that if you tried to make that movie today, you'd run into so many roadblocks. Studios would be scared to touch it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just don't feel like it would happen. I think you'd get a lot of people complaining, a lot of protesting, and just a lot of, and you know, probably the Malcolm X estate may get involved. But I just think there's a lot of reasons why that movie would not happen nowadays, where it could have happened 20 years ago.
The sad thing that is that we are digressing in what we as adults can take and see. That is sad, but it is probably true. I mean, there's too many people are trying to get their 5 cents off somebody else's hard work that I don't think it would work like that as well.
Exactly.
He came up with a perfect time for his style of film.
Yeah. All right, and the last question dealt with the fact that Jesus is depicted as a white dude in the movie, which is just insane. I mean, come on. Jesus, the white dude, that's just ridiculous. Everybody knows he's
everybody knows he's Asian.
Exactly.
It's my observation. Many churches I've gone, you know, that's how they depict Jesus Christ. I didn't make that up.
What do you think of that depiction?
Thank the Lord. God bless him.
Are you thanking him that they do that depiction, or do you think that there should be a different depiction?
I'm going to go scripture on you. Can I go scripture on you?
Sure.
Jesus wept. We used to growing up, and we'd go down south, our grandparents would make us, you had to say a scripture before we, so we, me and my brothers would fight for that one. Jesus wept. Two words.
All right.
Can't go wrong with that, right?
Thank you.
Two words, Jesus wept.
Horrible. Let me tell you why that's
horrible.
Important. It wasn't good. And let me tell you why that's important, though. Because it rolls into what we were just talking about. And the reason that anybody can respect Spike Lee is because he tells the stories that are hard to tell, but that are the truth of what that area is. But you have a lot of people that just like to kick up dust, basically, to have Spike Lee saying, oh, well, Jesus isn't a white man. Well, anybody with half a brain should know that Jesus most likely looked Middle Eastern because he was from the Middle Eastern area. So he wasn't black or white or, you know, either one. But the question to ask her there, I hope it's not somebody that we know that I'm insulting, but not only was it important for her to ask a question that she wanted to kick up dust with, but she was persistent on getting that. Like, when he says, I don't have an opinion. Oh, but don't you think? Like, I think that's – I mean, there's already enough controversy. There's already enough story to go into. Maybe not in this movie entirely, but, you know, you don't need to kick up dust outside of what it's about.
Right. No, I agree. All right, so our talk with Spike Lee. It was an interesting one. It was definitely a lot of fun, and the guy is always has something interesting to say. So thank you to him for that. Thank you for everybody who's there also to help make that happen. And, you know, I'm looking forward to see what he does with Old Boy. He did break a little bit of news there, which we talked about last week, which was that the film would start shooting in October. So yeah, we already got that up on the site.
And he showed a lot of respect for the original, just in that one line that he said. So I think we can expect it to stay somewhat faithful. And that's the last cool thing I'll say about Spike Lee is you.
Ever?
You don't have
the last cool thing you'll say about him ever.
Ever, because I'm done with him after this.
All right.
he's not so self-involved that he's going to take something like Old Boy and try to put his own spin on it completely. You know, he's fine with making a movie
Old
for the movie's
moves.
Sake.
It's a bold move. Old Boy is a beloved film. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one of those movies. It's a modern day classic. I don't think you fuck with it.
No.
But if you're going to do it, I'm interested in seeing what Spike Lee does. I'm glad he didn't just get some generic filmmaker to do it. I'm glad they got somebody like Spike Lee who has a distinct style, and I want to see what he brings. So,
and Old Boy has influenced so much Academy Award winning cinema over here in the States. I mean, a lot of people don't realize this, but No Country for Old Men was directly derived from Old Boy as far as hairstyles go. one of the movies we got to talk about today is The Apparition, and that's the last thing we'll talk to Spike about is whether or not we should tell you about The Apparition.
Because people need to know.
I guess we don't have to talk about The Apparition.
That's good. I didn't see it. And according to Julian's review, it was shit anyway. So
it was. I you know what? The only reason I saw this movie, and this is how bad my memory is sometimes,
Ashley
is that... No. If you remember last week when we were talking about it, I thought this was the Jeffrey Dean Morgan Dibbuk movie.
Oh, you got it mixed up, yeah.
And I got it mixed up. After we talked about it on the show, I just got it mixed up again this weekend, and I went to see it. And as soon as I saw Tom Felton's bald head come on the screen, I was like, God damn it. I wanted to walk out. But it was as bad as the trailers looked. Right now it's rocking a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes and only a 40% on the audience take. Usually the audience is pretty generous.
That one. I'm glad I avoided it then. All right, so let's jump into Premium Rush here because we were already about 45 minutes into the show. Mm-hmm. So let's jump into Premium Rush and do this one real, and let's rush right through this thing like we're a bike messenger. Right, premiumly, if that's a word. Joseph Gordon-Levitt plays Wiley, who's this badass New York City bicycle messenger. He's kind of like a daredevil bike messenger. And he gets this package he's meant to deliver across town in like 90 minutes, which is already hard enough. But as soon as he gets the thing, he becomes target number one for Bobby Monday, who's this cop played by Michael Shannon in full Nicolas Cage in Bad Lieutenant mode. He's just absolutely crazy in this movie. And from that point on, as soon as Bobby Monday enters the picture, it is just sort of breakneck chase film with lots of bells and whistles. There's this Google Maps type thing that they always jump into anytime Wiley has to get across town. And there's this really nifty little sequence where he kind of, in Sherlock Holmes style, I compared him to Sherlock Holmes in my review, he sees ahead and time sort of slows down. And he can see the consequences of every decision he makes. Like, if he decides to take a left turn here, he might run into a taxi. If he goes straight, he might run into a bus. You know, he's trying to sort out which route is the right path to take and not get himself killed. I think that part was really cool. Mm-hmm. My biggest problem with it, though, is that David Koepp, who wrote and directed it, kind of leans a little too heavily on that and the Google thing. I think it's probably because... watching Joseph Gordon-Levitt ride his bike through town gets kind of boring after a while. As much as I love him and the movie has some great sequences in it, I got a little tired of seeing him do that. You know?
Yeah.
That was my biggest problem with it. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. You're still talking about just get, like, I don't know, the way you said it, that's my bigger problem. I thought you were leading into something and just taking a breath.
No, sir. I was trying to lead it to you.
I really dig Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I think anybody that's ever listened to the show really like that. Michael Shannon is one of probably the most – I don't even know if it's underrated anymore because a lot of people are starting to hear about him. Yeah. But this is a guy – everybody knows my love for the horribly bashed Pearl Harbor. But that's when I first noticed Michael Shannon. And I've been a fan of his ever since then. He's just such a distinctive-looking gentleman with that's a great actor under everything else. And I thought everything came together. I think this movie was more pulpish than I expected it to be. I guess because of the career trajectory that Joseph Gordon-Levitt's had since this movie's inception. Was there some kind of production halt on this? I remember seeing trailers this time last year.
This movie's been around for a little while. I believe it finished in 2010, and Sony has been, and I wrote about this too, and I actually mentioned it today in the box office breakdown, was that Sony really didn't know how to market the film. And, you know, bike movies, they aren't all that sexy. So they really didn't know what to do with it. So they kind of kicked it around for a couple of years trying to figure out a place to put it. And finally they were just like, you know, fuck it, we'll put it right after The Dark Knight Rises because he's in that.
Yeah,
and,
that makes sense.
It makes sense in a certain way. It didn't really pay off for them, but I can see why. I mean, to me, the movie's just sort of, it's just sort of there. I left the movie there thinking, you know, I enjoyed some of it. Every time the action slowed down, I got bored. You know, I thought some of the things were a little silly. It's just a tough movie to market. It doesn't really have a niche. Doesn't really have a place. The only thing that really draws you to it is Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and I don't think his character is all that exciting in this movie.
There's only so exciting you can make a bike messenger. And I think, given what they were working with, I think they did a great job. You know, the things like the Google Maps and everything, I think that was kind of to a bit overused, but what else are they going to do? I think with the limited resource they had to make this exciting, I think they did actually a damn good job. But I
give him props for doing a lot of the stunts, too, because he did get injured on the set and all that stuff.
I
give him props.
He got effed up, as a matter of fact, if I remember correctly. But Levitt, he's a guy that – he's one of those actors that I like personally even as much as I like him as an actor, which is funny because I don't know him personally. But just little stuff like he went on record saying Anne Hathaway was kind of a bitch, things like that. And it makes sense because everybody's heard that before. You know, you have, like, Katherine Heigl and all that. They're like, I'm an actress in the biggest movie. And he's not like – he seems more like the guy that's like, you went and saw my movie? Cool, thank you. You know, and it really comes across on screen. He's a much more likable person than a lot of actors out there. But at the end of the day, this movie really is a last week of August movie. The last death grip of a summer gone. But it wasn't so horrible that you wouldn't like it. I think it's going to be a rental for most people. But I
would say it's a rental, definitely. I ended up giving it a 3 out of 5. It's perfectly fine. The movie's like 80 minutes long. I mean, it's not long. It's just sort of this little shot of adrenaline, and that's fine, and then it's over. But so 3 out of 5 for me. It's fine. It's watchable.
I'll hold with that. 3 out of 5 sounds about good. Rental probably, but if you want to sit in the nice cool, and especially I don't know how many Waldorfians are listening to this show, but I don't know if you've ever seen. I usually wouldn't brag or anything. I'm not one of those Waldorf self-haters like a lot of people that are from where I am. I think this place is fine. But the movie theater, we kept getting people telling us, like, the Waldorf movie theater was probably one of the dregs of the community for a long time. I'm talking like literally you needed a chisel to get your foot off the floor when you were done. It was so nasty. But they redid the whole thing. They had these gigantic, like a millionaire's theater in his house, Lazy Boy seats that are automatically go all the way back to a complete laying position. You still have room to walk in front of and behind people. The theater is silly. Like, it's pretty awesome now. So if anybody out there is watching that, this would be a good time to take advantage of that new theater that you guys should check out there.
One last thing about Premium Rush, and me and our friend Rocky were discussing this during and after the movie, because this is one of those movies we felt okay to talk through. we were discussing the sort of career path of Jamie Chung, who's in this movie. And I think we both can agree she's pretty hot.
She flares up every once in a while, and then just goes away for a little bit.
Right. I didn't think she was all that hot in this movie either. But no. But one thing that we both found interesting was that when she was on The Real World San Diego all those years ago, her basically the main hook of her role on that show was that she was this girl who was not trying to be like an Asian stereotype. Like she was like the most Americanized Asian person ever. She was really trying not to be that way, and she didn't talk to her family much because they were so, you know, so Asian. You know what I mean? And she was so different. She didn't have that much in common with.
She distanced herself.
Every single role she plays, she's the stereotypical Asian, which I always thought was funny.
Let me read off her next two screen credits and show you how much she's distancing. You wouldn't even know the ethnic heritage of this person if you didn't know who I was talking about. The Man with the Iron Fist, she plays Lady Silk. Obviously, that could be anybody. And then in 7500, she plays Susie Lee. That could be any person. She might as well be Jane Smith. Lady Silk and Susie Lee.
Yeah, she always plays this sort of character, so it's like, whatever. And then she did it again in Hangover Part 2. So it's like, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Well, I guess all those high laurels of not wanting to be stereotyped kind of go away when it means a paycheck sometimes for some people.
But, you know, between her and Jacinda Barrett, they're probably the two biggest successes out of the Real World clan. Unless you count The Miz, Mike The Miz Mizanin, at least he's been World Heavyweight Champion in the WWE. So I guess those are the top three most successful.
Yeah, I forgot any of those people. Well, The Miz I remember, but I forgot that Jamie Chung and Jacinda Barrett were on The Real World. So
Jacinda
I guess
Barrett
that's a testament to them doing well.
She was like in the season, I don't know if it was season 2 or 4, but the one in Europe, Jacinda Barrett was in that one. So, yeah. All right. So those are our reviews for the week. This coming Tuesday, we're going to have an interview with Craig Zobel. The director, writer and director of the movie Compliance, which we talked about briefly last week, comes out, expands this week into D.C. and some other areas. Fantastic film, very disturbing. I don't ever want to watch it again, but I know some people who watched it 3 or 4 times. Those people are obviously gluttons for punishment, but that's fine. But it's a fantastic film, though. It's just tough to watch. Makes you think. So we're going to be talking to him on Tuesday, playing that interview for you and discussing Compliance a little bit. So that's in 2 days.
Oh, and the other movie that's fresh this week that came out was Dax Shepard's Hit and Run.
Because people didn't need to know.
Oh, all right. Sorry, Spike.
To be fair, Hit and Run, I gave it 3.5 out of 5. I actually liked it quite a bit. I think it's a lot of fun in a Cannonball Run sort of way. Bradley Cooper is out of this world as a dreadlocked ex-con, really, really very violent and I don't know what the word is, bipolar, I guess is the best way to describe him.
I actually didn't see that
I enjoyed
one.
It
I,
quite
I
a
was
bit.
Just, I was just being prejudiced on it based on what I heard. Plus, I wanted to use the clip again. I really did.
Yeah, it is. It's funny. But yeah, it works because of Dax Shepard and Kristen Bell, though. I mean, they're the best part. And the scenes with them together, of course, they're together in real life as a fiance.
One of the great injustices of this country.
Oh, it's awful. It's awful. and there's
this
a lot
the
of
guy that used to stretch butt naked in front of Jessica Alba on an episode of Punked is now with Kristen Bell.
I can't believe the guy from Without a Paddle is with Kristen Bell now.
Yes.
But anyway, some of the dialogue between those two is just really works. There's a nice little romance in the middle of the movie that works. I'm almost certain that a lot of the dialogue comes from some real conversations those two had together. So if see it for them, see it for Bradley Cooper. If that stuff works, the cast is great. It's worth seeing.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
What's up with the box office this weekend?
Box office.
Maybe a lot of big new movies come out. Did any of them... break the top
this is probably the weakest group
good
of
Lord.
New releases ever. Yeah, number one for the second week in a row is The Expendables 2. $13.5 million this week. It's up to $52 million domestic. I think at this point we can tell that it's not going to do quite the same business as the previous film, which is a little disappointing because I really want to see The Expendables 3 just based on who they're trying to get for it. I mean, Chuck Norris came out this week and said he won't be in it. I'm not surprised by that. But
72 years old?
He's 72. He didn't... I don't know if you remember back in January when he started that whole thing where he wasn't going to do... He didn't want to do the movie if it was going to be rated R. And for about a week or two, they actually changed it to PG-13 just based on Chuck Norris. I mean, he didn't want to do a movie that was going to be have all that vulgar language and shit. And eventually the studio backed off on that and changed it back to rated R. But obviously that's probably playing a part of it too, that he doesn't want to do another movie that's going to be rated R. So, whatever.
He's 72 years old. he looks better than anybody else on that screen.
For what he did in this movie, he could be 80. I mean, the guy didn't do anything.
I'm just more surprised that if you look at him, like Arnold Schwarzenegger is obviously old. Even Stallone and Van Damme are obviously old.
Old too. He
didn't look that old. He didn't have a single wrinkle on his face.
Oh, he hid it behind a thick beard and a pair of sunglasses. But he looked old.
Oh, well, that's 72. I hope I look that good when I'm 72.
Oh, well,
I hope I can grow a beard by the time I'm 72.
Oh, he's probably in better shape than me.
Oh, yeah, no, I guarantee he's in better shape than me.
Number two is The Bourne Legacy. It's up to $85 million. It's doing about the same business as The Bourne Identity did. So that's not bad, considering they're kind of starting over from scratch. Number three is Paranorman, struggling. $28 million is what it has after 2 weeks. Number four is The Campaign, $64 million after about a month. Number five is The Dark Knight Rises, which is up to $422 million domestic, about $910 million worldwide. Should be entering the top ten all time in just a couple of days. Mm-hmm. Number six is The Odd Life of Timothy Green, $27 million for 2 weeks. Number seven is Premium Rush, which debuted at $6.3 million, which, you know, kind of goes with what we were saying about them not knowing how to market it. Number eight, this was the surprise movie of the week, which was 2016 Obama's America documentary. I, of course, had a very lengthy amount of stuff to say about it on the box office write-up, because the movie is one of those anti-Obama documentaries from this guy, Dinesh D'Souza, who's just a guy's just a douche nugget. I can't stand him.
I don't think you can watch any political movie that comes out at this particular time of year, because there's no way it's going to give a fair and balanced view. And I know I just used the Fox News thing, but don't kill me for that.
Yeah. This was just a perfect storm of things for this movie to do well. The movie's been out for about 6 or 7 weeks already. It's coming out right at the time of the Republican National Convention. It's on all of the right-wing sites, believe me. As much as I write every day, the 10 seconds I take in between writing something is me on political websites. So, I mean, all I do is movies and politics. All the websites right now are pumping this movie up pretty hard. So it opened at about 1,090 theaters, and, you know, so it got a pretty good bump. They'll probably get a second week of pretty good business before it fades away.
Left or right, up or down, I just take issue with the movie's tagline, which is a cheap ripoff of MTV's True Life, was it, when they talk to celebrities? Love him or hate him, you don't know him. That just sounds too much like, you think you know, you have no idea. True World, Obama. It's ridiculous.
It's basically, I've seen enough of it, and I've watched Dinesh D'Souza talk about the movie a million times already, and it's basically about a conspiracy theory. He's thrown into one big soup.
You won't get sensible arguments from either side this time.
He's from Kenya, you know. He's from Kenya. Number nine, Hope Springs, which is at $45 million. And number 10, creeping its way in, is Hit and Run, $5.9 million in its first week. That's actually not that bad, folks. And I know it doesn't sound that great, but it's not that bad, considering the movie cost about $2 million. Mm-hmm. It's a Dax Shepard and Kristen Bell movie. Neither one of them are big stars. There really are no big stars in it except for Bradley Cooper, and they were smart enough to put him at the front and center of the marketing. So good on Open Road for doing a good job on Hit and Run. It'll probably do solid business on the DVD market too. So
the other release of the week, The Apparition, still unrightfully so in the top 20 at number 12 with $17, I should say. No, $2.9 million for The Apparition. At number 12, but I mean, dipping outside of the top 20, you might think that's a death sentence enough. I don't think so. I think top 100. I think it's ridiculous that movies that were released on three screens did not make as much as that movie did. One we'll be talking about in the next coming weeks. I just had to put this out there, Cosmopolis. I've heard some very fervent pre-reviews from Travis and Rocky about how this movie was. It made $153,000. On 63 screens, so that's going to be expanding. That's Cosmopolis is the one with Robert Pattinson in the crazy world. You know, I finally found out. I thought this was a remake for the longest time because there was a movie. I couldn't figure out what it was, and I had to Google the cover of the DVD, which, by the way, worst idea I ever had because all I can remember of the cover was robot with pointy boobs. You don't want to Google that when Safe Search is off. I'm going to let you know right now. But Metropolis is the movie I was thinking of. I was like, oh, this must be a remake of
Metropolis. Metropolis is great.
Yeah, I thought it was Cosmopolis. I was a little confused.
Yeah, Metropolis is great. Cosmopolis is shit. I gave it a 1.5 out of 5. One of those long, impenetrable movies where people have conversations about nothing and don't even attempt to talk in natural language. It's just I could not stand this movie at all. I wanted to just run out of the theater. And I'm almost certain that everybody who was in there with me felt the same way. I don't want to get too deep into it. Just know that I gave it a 1.5 out of 5, and it was terrible.
Well, all I know is that the things I now know from Googling a robot with pointy boobs.
Because people didn't need to know.
No, Spike. I got to stop doing it. I did it, and I'm not happy about it. So,
all right.
DVD for the week.
Let's
I'm wearing it out for the end of the day. I don't care.
Let's go with DVD and Blu-ray this week.
Yes,
The Walking Dead Season 2 comes out, man.
Oh, yeah.
The Walking Dead Season 2 comes out on DVD and Blu-ray this week. The Walking Dead Season 1 is on sale right now, too, for like $20. I'm tempted to buy it.
I'm
just breaking my rule of not buying any TV series until it's over. I've been burned too many times buying a series without seeing the whole thing all the way through and then having it suck like the last 2 years. Like Lost. Like all those people who bought Season
Heroes,
one,
season.
Lost, and they're like, yeah, this show's awesome. It's going to stay awesome. And then it's like the last 4 or 5 seasons are just shit.
Yeah. Well, folks, if you are a fan of The Walking Dead, you need to go to our Amazon.com site right now. If you go to PunchDrunkCritics.com and click on Shop at PunchDrunkCritics in the upper right-hand corner and then type in The Walking Dead, you'll see the limited edition Blu-ray package. Might be one of the coolest Blu-ray packages I've ever seen. It's a zombie head on top of a key of Walking Dead with a screwdriver stuck in its eye.
It's pretty awesome.
And also, if you're real diehard fans and you haven't gotten the first season yet, you need to make sure you get the limited edition of the first season too, because Travis, I don't know if you've seen it, I'm still actually waiting to see it, is the unreleased black and white pilot, which kind of went with the same visual aspect that the comic books go by, which is all black and white, if anybody doesn't know.
I have not seen that, and I really would like to. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, I saw like the first minute or two of it, and it looked amazing. It goes by a completely different storyline, and it's completely black and white. So,
Week. I'm sorry, I have been urgent. This must be TV season day and on DVD and Blu-ray. The Walking Dead, Sons of Anarchy, Homeland, Once Upon a Time, Boardwalk Empire. All this stuff's coming down on DVD and Blu-ray this Tuesday. What the hell?
We're about to kick off the summer season premiere season.
Yeah, I guess so.
Series season, however you want to say that. A lot of new movies, shows will be starting in September is what I mean.
Yeah, that's so true.
They're kicking them out now when they get the most stuff out there.
True.
Probably one of the creepiest movies I've seen cover-wise in a while is this Lovely Molly that's coming out on Blu-ray.
I've heard a lot about that movie, but I've never seen it.
Yeah, I don't know much about it either. It's just for the people that brought you the Blair Witch Project, so maybe that's one to check out. It's definitely one of those covers that you would always remember in the video store when you were a kid. Battleship, as I like to call it, is coming out. You know what? I'll be honest with you. As a rental, it might not be that bad of a Friday night movie. You know, whatever. You might want to check it out then.
I agree. I gave it a decent score. I gave it a 3 out of 5. It's watchable. Not much more than that. It's empty calories. If you can deal with that, then it's fine.
Yeah. Think Like a Man, the movie based on the book by Steve Harvey, comes out. Well, I think a movie that we both really liked,
and
recommend as a buy even if you're into romantic comedies. This is a very good one to watch. The Lucky One with Zac Efron.
You'll be lucky if you don't ever have to watch it.
Exactly. We do have the latest Starship Troopers, which is apparently Casper Van Dien wasn't available, so they went to CGI.
Casper Van Dien he actually produces it. We got the trailers for it up on the site. It's actually been in development for a while. I've actually covered it since like frame one that they started making it, so I'm actually kind of excited for it.
Really?
It actually looks really good.
I'm gonna have to watch the trailer because I only watched the first like 30 seconds and it was just basically somebody suiting up.
Sadly, I could have attended the U.S. premiere of it at Comic-Con, and I was too tired that night, and I couldn't make it.
Well, I'm sure your sleep was well-deserved, and you used it better somewhere else. Oh my God! I'll get to this other movie in a second, but you know, any George Lucas haters, any Star Wars fans that just hate all the additions that are coming out, I think you need to really be thankful that you are not a Lord of the Rings fanboy, because they seem to come out with a new special edition every week. The 5-disc Blu-ray extended super special edition of The Fellowship of the Ring, and then The Two Towers, and then The Return of the King, which count 15 discs total, people, is out. Actually, not that expensive, believe it or not. Right now, if you go to punchdrunkcritics.com, click on shop at punchdrunkcritics.com, and click and search for Lord of the Rings, you can get these 5-disc editions of each movie for $23. I'm actually considering getting these before I go to sleep tonight, now that I see it this way. So Peter Jackson managed to make you buy this stuff without hating him, so he's the genius. Headhunters is a movie
very
coming
good.
Out.
Very good.
Let's see.
I did a snap judgments on that one after it came out. Very good, very funny, and very violent crime flick from Sweden. So check it out; it's very good.
Okay. That's just, okay. I remember this now. Okay. I did want to see that one. The only movie that I will agree with the DVD cover title that says "Forget the Avengers." We have a new contender for best film of the summer. I'm going to amend that and say best film of the year, possibly the decade. And that, my friends, is Jersey Shore Shark Attack on Blu-ray. Because
is it finally out? Sweet.
Since the premiere of Jersey Shore and the world was introduced to the likes of Snooki and Pauly D, what if you wanted to see more than them get completely eaten and possibly regurgitated by a great white shark? Not much that I would like to see other than that. So that's out as well.
Yeah. All right. And I think only a couple of them from that show are actually on there. Like maybe
the people from the show are actually on it?
I think only I'm pretty sure Vinny is on there, but I don't think Snooki's on there. I think there's like he might be the only one that's on there, or maybe I think that might be it actually.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. I'm
pretty sure the whole cast is on there though.
Yeah. But what are you going to do? Those all come out Tuesday. Make sure to check out the site, punchdrunkcritics.com, for the links to all of these. I will make a promise to you people that they will be up Tuesday morning this time, so you can get them right when they come out. So you can check those out then.
Yeah.
Also, Glee Season 3, Once Upon a Time, as Travis mentioned. Homeland and In Plain Sight TV shows are all coming out. Zebra Man, I know everybody's waiting for that. That'll be out, and that's about all I remember.
If it was Zebra Head with Michael Rapaport, then maybe.
I get that one. Green Lantern, the animated series, also is coming out. This was probably, in the vein of the movie, this is probably one of the worst animated. I love comic book animated series. This is not one to watch. It's a really, like, Weebles Peebles, like, looking version of animation. I didn't like it very much. I don't think it will either.
All right, news. Blazed through those last couple segments. We still got 20 minutes left.
Yeah.
All right, a couple things. I don't remember what we talked about last week. Did we talk about the all-female Expendables movie?
No.
Okay, well, there's a movie that's similar to the Expendables that's in the works right now, and it's going to unite a bunch of female action heroes. So they're basically just calling it all-female The Expendables right now. Nobody has been approached for it yet, but I think we have a pretty good idea of who might be approached. You know, Sigourney Weaver, maybe Mila Jovovich. You know, we could probably come up with names of who they would likely turn to for.
I don't think the women have fared as well though, because like obviously Brigitte Nielsen would be one.
I think they would fare better.
You think so?
I think yeah.
Brigitte Nielsen could make it?
Well, no. Well, I wouldn't put Brigitte Nielsen in there anyway. But
she was a pretty big name.
I don't think they're saying they have to go back and find every old broad who ever was an action hero like the Expendables, but let's say they go for, like I said, Sigourney Weaver. Still looks pretty good. She could do something. Let's say like Mila Jovovich or Kate Beckinsale or Linda Hamilton. These people don't look bad. They could still do some stuff.
You know, the 80s and 90s had a different level. You just enlightened me to something. The 80s and 90s had a different level of a hotness quotient for an action star. When you're absolutely right, Sigourney Weaver and Linda Hamilton were the hot women action stars of the 80s and 90s. But then when you compare that to the late 90s and 2000, when you got Kate Beckinsale, Mila Jovovich, I mean, we're on a different plane here, my friend. We're on a different galaxy of hotness here.
Well, I mean, Angelina Jolie, you could put her in it. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I would even say you could put Charlize Theron in there. She's an action star.
Is Pam Grier still alive?
Pam Grier is still alive.
I would love to see Pam Grier in it.
I'd love to see her in it too. But of course, I want Chyna O'Brien, Cynthia Rothrock to be in there. So
we did talk about that part last week. Chyna O'Brien, we did talk about. I don't think we talked about it being an all women's Expendables, which is actually a really cool idea.
I think we were talking about something else. Mm-hmm. Because I think I wrote that late that night. But Gina Carano, you could go after her. Uma Thurman, maybe. You know,
okay, I can see it.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, and of course, I want them to put Zoe Bell in there because I think she's amazing. She's the best stunt woman in the business right now.
She's a slightly ugly chick from Death Proof.
She's the Australian chick from Death Proof.
Yeah,
I don't consider her ugly, but
Her nose could cook glass, but whatever.
You know, I'm going to tell her you said that because we're really close to her right now because they're doing that movie Raise, which we've been doing all that press for. So we're really close to Zoe Bell right now, and if we ever get a chance to talk to her, I'm going to remind
please,
her.
Please don't. I don't need to get my ass kicked by a woman. That is not on my list of things to do before I die. And you know what? She is hot. I'm just being a jerk right now. She's oddly hot, is what I was going to say in the beginning. I mean, that's what I was going to say. I'm not backtracking here.
The oddly makes it sound better. When you put
yes,
it
oddly hot.
All right, so that's happening. I'm interested in seeing where that goes. This is something that we don't really have to talk about. Sam Claflin has been confirmed as Finnick O'Dair in Catching Fire, the Hunger Games sequel. That was like the hottest role in Hollywood for like the last 6 months. So that is finally over and done with. I think it's a boring choice for a boring actor, but whatever. That's over and done with. All right, superhero shit. Ben Affleck, he really confirmed that he's not going to be the Justice League director. I don't know if you saw that story. I think I put it up there yesterday. He had this really funny quote that he was talking to this Canadian site. About it. I think he was doing press for Argo, his hostage drama that's coming out, and he got asked about Justice League, and here's what he said. I'm not working on the Justice League. One of the problems with entertainment websites, which is already a funny prelude already, one of the problems with entertainment websites is that they need to fill pages, and that's how rumors get started. Justice League sounds really exciting, but it's not something I'm working on. Okay. I guess you're not doing Justice League, and please stop asking him about it.
You know, Ben Affleck, one of the funny things about pretentious actors is that they hate attention when they get them. No. They don't like it when they don't get the attention later, though.
It's not. It's exactly the Spike Lee thing. I mean, it's exactly the same. You know, you're working on something. You got a movie like Argo coming out that is already going to have a tough enough time, you know, getting people who want, because not a lot of people are going to want to pay to see a movie about the Israeli hostage situation from the 1980s. So you're there to talk about that, and you're getting asked about a superhero movie. And if you were reported as having not taken a job 2 weeks ago and you're still getting asked about it, I'd be a little frustrated too. But
I get it. I'm just saying it's a little bit of a broad statement to say one of the problems with entertainment websites.
Well, he's not wrong. I mean, we're no different.
Fills pages, Ben Affleck.
it's funny to me. So he's confirmed that he's not going to be in it. Now, a lot of people have taken that statement and kind of run with it and been like, well, he did actually say he'll never, ever do it. He's saying he's not working on it right now. I'm pretty sure he's not going to be working on it. But then today, the story came out that the Wachowskis are in the short list to direct the film.
I love that we can't call them the Wachowski brothers anymore.
Yeah, I know. So the Wachowskis are in the mix to do it. They're the only name we know of that's on Warner Brothers' short list right now, other than Affleck. We know they still want Affleck, even if he's not going to do it. I think it's an awesome choice. You know, I think they bring a certain style and energy to all their movies, whether they're good or bad, that I think would be great for Justice League. And they have some comic book experience. I mean, they produced V for Vendetta, wrote the script for it. I don't like that movie, but they have comic book experience. So I don't know. I'm interested in seeing everybody else that's on the wish list for Warner Brothers. I really want David Goyer to get the job, even though I know he won't. He's not a sexy enough name. But the guy has comic book experience more than anybody else. I mean, he did the Blade movies.
I don't understand how he's not a sexy enough name even these days. I mean, you're right, but I mean...
He wrote all three of Christopher Nolan's Batman movies. All three of them. So, I mean, yeah. So he brings a sense of continuity also. I would think he's a logical choice. But I don't know if he's... I think for a movie like Justice League, they want a sexy name. Which is why you go after Ben Affleck. Which is why you go after the Wachowskis. I think that's what they're aiming for. So I don't think Goyer will end up...
I think the Wachowskis really should not be considered for anything anymore because they can't... They're not good, man. They suck. They were good at The Matrix. All right, let's look at their directing. Cloud Atlas is still to be seen. It looks amazing from the previews. But let's look at their directing filmography. You have Bound. Good movie. Gave us a good scene. Right. The Matrix. Awesome movie. Matrix Reloaded. Not as good. Enter the Matrix video game. Sucked. Matrix Revolution, Matrix Online, Matrix Path of the Neo, all sucked. Speed Racer sucked.
Oh, I like Speed Racer, so.
V for Vendetta, I liked it, but not...
They
didn't
direct it, they just wrote the script.
Yeah, but they wrote it, and David Goyer writes the stuff, too. I think that it really upsets me that they wouldn't go to somebody like David Goyer and then think about the sexy name, because the thing about sexy names is when you look past it, there's really not much to it. There's probably one good movie at some point in their career.
I think they have a certain, like I said, they bring an energy and a very distinct visual look. I think if you want to have a movie with a lot of big special effects, which a Justice League movie probably should, then I think they're a good pick. I would prefer to see David Goyer, you know, like I said, he brings continuity and a real passion for these particular characters. But, you know, I just don't think he's a big enough name. I think if you roll out there and say David Goyer is directing it, then people are going to be like, what? I think that's a problem. Do I think he'll end up having some involvement in the movie, like maybe as a co-writer for Will Beale or something like that? Then maybe. But
mm-hmm.
as director, I don't think so.
Okay, I can see it.
Yeah, I mean, it's disappointing. I'd like to see him in there. Disney may be planning a remake of The Rocketeer.
I saw that.
Yeah, that's just a rumor at this point that Disney's considering doing that. The Rocketeer was the movie that came out in 1991, starred Billy Campbell and Jennifer Connelly. It's one of those retro movies based in the 1930s about this guy who finds a jetpack and starts fighting the Nazis and shit. You know, I was always kind of lukewarm on that movie.
It did give us the first look at adult Jennifer Connelly, though.
That's true. No, there's no doubt that Jennifer Connelly was good looking in it. But the movie itself, I thought, was just okay. Like, I didn't think there was anything special about it. That I certainly wasn't begging for a remake of it. But I know a lot of people consider it a cult classic. So, you know, I'm curious to see if that actually happens. I won't be surprised if it does. Personally, I'd rather see a remake of Sky Captain and the World Tomorrow. If we're going to go back to nostalgia movies, I'd rather see that one.
I do like the steampunk feel movies, though, like that. They are pretty cool. It's a pretty good time period to go to. The Rocketeer, I really don't think that there's... It worked back in the early 90s because there weren't a lot of superheroes that we could really watch that weren't majors. But The Rocketeer really is just a guy with a rocket pack. And no people aren't going to be that interested in him, I don't think.
It's interesting because, you know, it's Disney, and you'd think Disney would be like, don't we already have one guy in a suit who flies around in Iron Man to fight crime? Don't we already have that guy?
Yeah, he actually has a cool suit. He doesn't just have a rocket pack and a bronze helmet.
Right. So it seems like they wouldn't want to do something like that. See, The Dark Tower, Warner Brothers passed on it about a week ago. So that makes two studios that have passed on The Dark Tower now. But it looks like it may have found a home with Media Rights Capital. They're the guys who did Ted, who produced Ted, which was a huge hit. So they have all sorts of money right now and may be able to finance The Dark Tower. That, of course, is the Stephen King novel. It's like supernatural and horror and Western and fantasy and all sorts of shit all rolled into one. The reason why this thing has been so hard for anybody to get underway is because it would require three movies and two TV seasons, which is huge.
Mm-hmm.
Huge commitment. Javier Bardem had to drop out because the shit was taking too long to get done. Russell Crowe is now, you know, in talks to play Roland DeChain, the gunfighter. So we'll see how that goes. I think it'll eventually happen just because I think there's too much money there. I mean, if this thing is a hit, then we're talking Lord of the Rings level hit.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think somebody will end up picking it up. I'm just surprised it wasn't Universal or Warner Brothers. It just seems strange to me. There's a Japanese remake of Unforgiven that's coming up. I know you're a fan of Unforgiven. Are you?
The Clint Eastwood Western?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Was it Tombstone or Unforgiven that you were
Tombstone is my top seed. It's Tombstone, then Quick and the Dead, and then Unforgiven.
Okay. All right. So, Japanese remake of Unforgiven with Ken Watanabe to star in it. Ken Watanabe's awesome.
You love that guy.
Yeah, he is amazing. So, he's going to be in the title role of that one, the one Clint Eastwood played. And that's basically it. There's also this thing about Anna Kendrick, Felicity Jones, and Boots. They're in contention to play the female lead in Captain America, the Winter Soldier. The role is probably going to be for Sharon Carter. That wasn't said explicitly, but it would seem to make sense that it'd be Sharon Carter. She is the niece of Peggy Carter, who was played by Haley Atwell in the first Captain America film. And Sharon Carter is very important. She's a major S.H.I.E.L.D. agent known as Agent 13. She's also a love interest to both the Winter Soldier and Captain America at different points. So they could be setting up a
love triangle
sort of thing. I know. And there's all sorts of stuff that they could be doing with that. So I was leaning towards Anna Kendrick taking that just because I love her and everything.
Yeah, I lean towards her tying her shoes if she needs to. Amazing woman. Actress.
So that's basically it. Trailers on the site this week. New trailer for Butter. That's the movie with Jennifer Garner. The Butter sculpting comedy, which actually looks pretty good. Passion, which dudes need to watch it. It's because it stars Noomi Rapace and Rachel McAdams. And there is girl-on-girl action, folks. It's Brian Palma directing it, so you know there's girl-on-girl action. new trailer for End of Watch. A Lawless Red Band trailer. New trailer for The Frozen Ground with Nicolas Cage and Vanessa Hudgens. And a trailer for The Impossible, which is the 2004 Tsunami movie with Ewan McGregor and Naomi Watts. So, those are the trailers for this week.
Yeah, and next week we actually have a big week, mostly because a movie I keep mistaking as coming out previous weeks is actually coming out, and that's The Possession with Jeffrey Dean Morgan about the Jewish possession demon, the Dybbuk, who, if I'm not mistaken, was also the subject of Sam Raimi's last horror movie. Don't Go to Hell, what was it?
No, it wasn't that one, was it?
Drag Me to Hell.
It was a different one, wasn't it?
I know the Dybbuk was in something.
Yeah, no, it was, but I'm not sure if it was that one. I could be wrong. You might be right. I don't know.
Regardless, I think it's a cool thing to be in movies. It's not the regular Roman Catholic demon that we always see all the time. For a good time call, which is about a couple of roommates get into the sex phone business or phone sex business.
And we have an interview with Ari Grainer and Leslie Ann Miller, the writer of the film and the director. And another writer for the film. So we have that interview that'll be there next week. I saw that back at Sundance. So my review's
you've got quite a connection nowadays to your one of your favorite movies of the last 5 years, Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist. You've talked to quite a few people from that movie, if I remember correctly.
I have, and I've been very lucky. Now, next up is Michael Cera.
Yes.
Need to talk to Michael Cera about something now.
Lawless comes out, a movie that we've had screenings for about 2 months now, based on a true story about a moonshine gang operating in Franklin County, Virginia during Prohibition, starring Tom Hardy, Shia LaBeouf, and Guy Pearce. Two out of the three I really like. One out of three I think is a relentless douchebag.
He's actually pretty good in the movie, though.
He is good in the movie. He's still a douchebag.
Yeah.
Anybody that makes their star burn bright and then turns and then talk shit about the movie that did so can cuddle with goats for all I care. And then a movie that's been out on video on demand for quite a bit, The Tall Man, starring Jessica Biel. Not really sure what it's about. It's a thriller. Anyway, we're about to get taken off the air here. Anyway, so
I'm sure they love the way you describe the movie right there. It's about
Spike. Do we need to talk anything else about movie Spike? I don't think so.
Because people need to know.
All right, well, then we're done, Spike. All right, we are out here. We'd like to thank Spike Lee. We'd like to thank all you guys for listening in, tuning in once again. We will be back next week with all those movies we told you about, The Possession, The Tall Man, Lawless, For a Good Time Call. Until then, make sure to check us out on PunchDrunkCritics.com. Every day, shop at PunchDrunkCritics.com. On email, just email us at PunchDrunkCritics@gmail.com or yahoo.com. On Twitter, we are at PunchyCritic and at PunchDrunkJohn. I'm about to pass out from not breathing, so if you got anything else to say, Travis?
We're out of here, folks.
See ya.